All right, Colleen's ready. I've already talked about relational, wow, I got loud all of a sudden, relational sandwiches. So I'm not going to teach that again because I've already taught it. It's right here in your handout. I give you an example of being triggered with Yahweh and how to use a relational sandwich with Yahweh when you don't feel connected to him or you can't get connected to him, and also an example of a relational sandwich with a friend. So you can read those. I encourage you to do so. Remember in the very beginning, page one, I talked about three things that are necessary in order for you to grow joy. Everybody in this room wants to grow joy, right?
Yes.
Yeah, you know the value of it. You appreciate it.
Yes.
And you want to hopefully propagate it in your friends and help others. So those three things, who can name one of them? Multi-generational community, right? Old and young, weak and strong, doing life together. That means when you go back home and you decide to do a little group, a joy building group, you want three or four in that group, four at the top, you're going to want to consider weak and strong, older and younger together in that group. And then this another thing that's necessary is a lifestyle of encountering Yahweh. So when you have your little group, don't just make it tea and cookies. You do want to eat together, but don't just make it about yourself, right? And talking about the weather and da-da-da-da-da. But incorporate encountering Yahweh together in that group. Now, we have something called Encountering God Manual in the back. And in that manual, if you don't have one, I encourage you to get one because it just really lays out how you can facilitate your own personal encounters and how you can facilitate other people's encounters. Again, you can listen to it on YouTube. And in that Encountering God, if you'll flip back towards the two-thirds of the way back-ish, you'll see a page there of some examples of how for you to have your own personal time with Yahweh by encountering him. And one of those ways is by using a scripture. Psalm 23, for example. You quiet yourself, you give your imagination to the Lord, da-da-da-da-da, and then you allow your imagination to enter into Psalm 23. The Lord is my shepherd. You allow your brain to see it, to feel it, to experience it. You might not be a seer. Most people can see. Not everybody believes they can, but your brain thinks in pictures, so everybody can see. But anyway, you perceive him in Psalm 23, and the Lord is my shepherd, and you allow that to play like a video. Don't stop it. It's powerful. And you talk, you interact with him, and you let him interact with you. And the next, and you just quote Psalm 23, if you can get through it. We did that as a farm project one time, and we were going to do the first, I think it was first verse, and we came back together the next week, and nobody gotten past the Lord is my shepherd, because he just came, and he just revealed himself every day. Another facet of what it was for him to be a shepherd. And we're all like, wow. So just let that unpack itself, those scriptures, and encounter him through the word, etc. So anyway, so that's the second thing, a lifestyle. That means you don't do it just once every 6 months, right? That means you make it a lifestyle of encountering, experiencing him. I'm not talking about praying. I'm not talking about interceding. I'm talking about this heart-to-heart relationship with Yeshua and Yahweh and the Holy Spirit, where you actually interact with each other. And again, if it doesn't line up with the Bible, you don't receive it. You'll be surprised at what he says. And the third necessary thing to grow joy, I said, was relational brain skills. And that's what we're going to talk about now. 19 of them. These are closely tied to our culture. It has to do with being polite, controlling ourselves, how to sleep through the night without wetting the bed. That's a relational joy skill, believe it or not. We probably all got that one, so you can check that one off your list. How to perceive or guess what people are thinking. That's a relational brain skill. Smiling when you see someone. That's a relational brain skill. Knowing to wait for someone else to speak. Knowing how to calm a friend who's upset. Knowing how to avoid irritating people. These are all relational joy skills. Some of us are better at some of those than others, right? So let's look at these 19 brain skills that are crucial for the formation of healthy identities. Number one, you are able to share joy. In other words, you're able to express that you're glad to be with people. You know, some people aren't able to do that. In their heart, they might be glad to be with you, but you'd never guess it by looking at their face. Yeah? Right? So a joy skill is by being able to communicate with your face, your tone of voice, your body language, that you actually are glad to be with me. And also able to share shalom, that belief that all is well and right and peaceful. Number two, you're able to calm yourself after you get upset. Especially those big six unpleasant emotions that none of us really like. You're able, number three, to form healthy bonds with two people, which means you're able to share a mutual mind state that brings you closer and lets you move independently as well. And both people in the relationship are satisfied. That prevents codependency from happening. I'm able to let Marie be Marie and let Marie move away as she needs to move away and come close when she needs to come close, and I'm the same here. We know we have that complete. I mean, I could call her, I don't care, day or night, and boy, she'd be there for me. I know that, and she knows that about me as well. That's a healthy mutual mind state, and it's a healthy relationship, healthy bond. The second healthy bond is a bond of three or four people. That's what I'm encouraging you guys to build. I want you to have both. The Lord wants you to have both. That one close friend or spouse or that you're just so comfortable with. You've got history. It's mutual respect and mutual love and mutual interchange between, that you could tell anything to, and that you know they're going to be there for you. That's that two-way bond. That's important. But in some ways, to your brain, the three-way bond is more important, where you and two other people, or three other people, it does work with four total, a little bit harder, because here's why, I'll tell you why. With four people, the tendency is two and two. You tend to, right? If you can facilitate that number and keep it as one group rather than it becoming two groups of two, that's wonderful. But if it becomes two groups of two, you basically have the first one, the two-way bond, right? And your brain needs a three-way bond or a four-way bond. So that's a relational brain skill, that you have this family. You're able to build this family bond and be part of. Sometimes people will be part of a two-way bond, and then a third person comes in, and one of the people all of a sudden get uncomfortable because they like the two-way bond. Mm-hmm. And that's okay. You can keep that two-way bond, but you better be able to have a three-way bond or even bring a fourth person in if you're going to be a gentle protector and have spiritual maturity and value and love not just that person you had that two-way bond with, but all of them. That is critical for our spiritual maturity. Okay? Number five, you are able to create appreciation in yourself and others. So someone with this skill expresses joy everywhere they go. People who use appreciation stay in relational mode and return there quickly if their relational circuits shut down. We use this skill to help others return to relational mode as well. Someone with this skill stands out by making people feel seen and celebrated. They're able to create belonging so that the weak start to engage with the strong. We remember what is important about other people, about a situation or ourselves. And as appreciation levels increase, problems start to shrink and life becomes more manageable. Noticing what we appreciate trains our brains to focus on the good things, and when activated, brings us together. Appreciation, appreciation, appreciation. Write it on your bathroom mirror. You know, I've got notes on my bathroom mirror. I've done it for years. And it's that important that we train ourselves, that our first response is, thank you, Lord. Thank you, Lord, for I don't understand it. It hurts like crazy, but thank you, Lord. Number six, identifies heart values that come from suffering. And that means, in other words, that you're able to suffer and understand that it's good, that it has value, that the Lord can be trusted to turn it for good. And that also means that you're risking caring deeply for somebody, knowing that that's going to hurt deeply if they betray us or turn against us, but you're willing. You're willing to take that risk. So, number seven, you're able to tell synchronized stories. That means you can communicate in a way that's clear and concise. When your brain is well-trained and your joy capacity is high, and when you're not triggered by the past, then your whole brain will work together to communicate clearly. So there's huge benefit in processing your past trauma. And you can, I know those of you that work with hurting people, it's easy to see, you know, when you're working with somebody and they can't complete a sentence. Or they're telling their story and then all of a sudden they lose track of where they're at, or they go left field or right field, or you know what I mean? That's a brain that's not working at full capacity. Number eight, you're able to identify maturity levels. We need to know what our personal ideal maturity level is so that we know if our development has been impaired. There's a great book. I think we've sold out of them. I don't think we have any more. But it's Living with Men is the name of it. It's a red book. It's got a picture of a man with a pacifier in his mouth. I know the author, and I told him, I said, why that picture? He said, well, it gets people's attention. And it does, boy, but it kind of makes you want to go. I don't want that book. Oh, yeah. But it's a fantastic book. It takes you from birth to death and explains the maturity levels of each age and what brain relational tasks you should have learned and you should be operating in at that age. And you might be surprised to find that you might not be as mature as you think you are. I know that happened to me when I got the book 10 years ago. I was like, oh, wow. Because we get stunted at where our trauma left us, you know? And so that's a great book. I'm trying to think the author's name. Forgot his name. He's a friend of mine.
Lehman.
Carl Lehman. But it's Living with Men. And it's not about men. It, you know, that's deceptive, too, the title. It's really about men and women. He said that he named it that because he learned that over 80-something percent of people that buy books are women. He figured women would buy that book. So, anyway, it's a really good book if you want to understand more about your relational abilities. Okay, number 9. You're able to take a breather, knowing when to stop, when to disengage. You're able to recognize warning signals from other people, both visual and auditory cues, in yourself and in other people. You're able to rely on mindsight to put ourselves in others' shoes to accurately gauge how that person's feeling and determine what they need and when to stop, when we need to stop what we're doing because it's not affecting them really well. Those who read the nonverbal cues from other people and let them rest are rewarded with trust and love. We honor others as we respect one another's limits and their endurance. Without this skill, we simply overwhelm other people and we feel overwhelmed ourselves. And then people feel guarded around us if we don't honor their boundaries. And our face, voice, words, the intensity that we speak with, an invasion of personal space makes other people feel like they cannot let down their guards. And the young, elderly, and weak or hurting people will shut down as a result. Not stopping always lowers joy levels. So this is a big deal for us as we're learning to relate with other people and to honor their boundaries. And so this skill, knowing when to stop, by paying attention, it's all about attunement. If I'm attuning to you, I'm going to read your body language, and I'm going to recognize that you're not really appreciating what I'm saying to you right now. And I'm going to honor that. And I'm going to stop. I'm going to back up. I'm going to go to the next thing, right? Mm-hmm. Number 10, you're able to tell nonverbal stories. In other words, you're able to talk with your body language. That's a skill. That's a relational skill. Mm-hmm. Like I've learned to lean forward. When somebody's talking to me, I'm going to lean forward. I'm going to make sure I'm not in an aggressive stance. I'm going to be, especially if they're sharing some trauma or they're hurt with me, and I'm on the inside, I'm going to be speaking to their spirit and blessing their spirit. They're safe. You're safe. You're loved. I'm so glad to be with you. I see you. I hear you. And I'm doing that internally to their spirits. And my body language will mirror that. So you're able to return to joy from the big six feelings. We talked about that: fear, anger, sadness, disgust, shame, and hopeless despair. And you're able to quickly resolve those not glad to be together moments. You're able to be your true self in the midst of the big six emotions. Number 13, you're able to see what Yahweh sees. Number 14, you're able to stop your flesh nature. Number 15, you're able to relate in an interactive way. In other words, facial cues, particularly of fear, help us to know when we are pushing other people too hard. For example, knowing when to stop tickling somebody so that it stays fun. If you've ever had an experience where somebody was tickling you and you didn't like it and they wouldn't stop, it's torment. You know, tickling is a form of torture, by the way. And so we have to learn when to stop by reading other people's body language and perceiving what they're feeling. You're able to relate in an interactive way. I just said that, facial cues, etc. You're able to recognize high and low energy response. You're able to recognizing who tends to respond with high energy. Those are adrenaline-based emotions. And recognizing who would rather withdraw. And we honor that. And that empowers us to respond accordingly. If I know that you're an introvert, and that tends to be low energy, I am not going to come in like Tigger and bounce all over you and on your parade and try to get you to be like me. Now, I'm going to be true to who I am, but boy, I'm going to honor who you are in the same place, the same way. Number 17, you're able to identify attachment styles. So how well we synchronize our attachments early in life leave the most enduring pattern in our personality. These patterns change the way we experience reality. At one end, we may give almost no importance to our feelings or relationships. And at the other, we may feel hurt almost constantly and think of nothing but feelings and people. We may also become afraid of the very people we need. So it's important for us to recognize what kind of attachment style we have and what kind of attachment style the other person has. 18, we're able to intervene where your brain is stuck. So if my brain gets stuck, I'm able to get unstuck. I have the relational skills to do that. And if your brain is stuck, then I'm able to help you, if you want my help, to get your brain unstuck. 19, you're able to recover from complex emotions and also handle combinations of the big six emotions. That means you're able to feel hopeless despair and anger at the same time. And you're able to recover from it, from the combination of those as well. So you're able to return to joy and able to be yourself when you're feeling those emotions. You don't do this Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde thing. When you feel those negative emotions, this is a relational skill to be able to feel them and remain true to who you are. Hopefully a gentle protector. Shame and anger, if somebody's feeling shame and anger at the same time, they combine to form humiliation. It's good for us to know if somebody feels humiliated, what's under it is shame and anger. Fear and hopelessness, with almost any other feeling with fear and fill in the blank, right, form dread. These combination feelings can be very draining and difficult to quiet. So it requires quite a bit of skill to do that. Yes?
What is number 14?
Number 14, able to stop your flesh nature. Did I skip that one?
No, where is that one?
It's called the fruit of the spirit, self-control. Okay. You feel your flesh rising up, and you really want to tell D off. Not really, but. and you're able to stop yourself and say, I love D, I honor her, I do not want to hurt her. You use the relational sandwich with your own mind. So I'm not going to stomp on her foot when I walk by her. You know, so, yeah. Okay? All right. Everybody good? You got all 19 of them, right? We're going to practice, right? All right, the main reason joy is essential for propagating brain skills is that these skills, the 19 that we just talked about, will not spread without a bonded relationship. You have to be in a bonded relationship in order to grow the 19 relational skills. Joy, somebody's glad to be with you, provides that relationship, that bond. So that's number one. Make sure you have a relationship in which you're bonded. You have a two-way and a three-way relationship. And I'll give you an example here. The skill of knowing how and when to stop. If I don't know how and when to stop, I can't read the nonverbal signals correctly or activate, this is getting a little technical, or activate the correct parasympathetic vagal nerve branch in response to the signals that I do see. Then it's not going to help me if somebody tells me to stop the next time. It just won't add up in my brain. And it won't help me if I want to stop the next time. If someone else tells me to stop, it won't be effective. The skill doesn't propagate on command or on verbal instructions. We have to practice the skill. And most of the time, we learn it in relationships, that healthy shame. When you do this, I feel that. And that doesn't feel good to me. You know, and we teach and train each other. So please stop. Don't do that to me. I don't appreciate it. I love you. I want to be friends with you. I want to be in relationship with you. But that behavior right there, I can't. That's not going to work for me. And if that person isn't able to practice that skill, and they might blow it two or three or four or five, that's why it's good for us to be gentle protectors. Doesn't mean you sweep it under the rug. It means that if they do it again, you lovingly use the relational sandwich again and confront them again and again and again. That's what should have happened when they were babies, right, and toddlers. And parents should have taught them. All these skills were supposed to have been taught to us as children. And not a lot of us had that. All right? How do we propagate gentle protector relational skills? Number one, a bond between people. Active face-to-face real-time engagement with people, not through Facebook. That doesn't count. It's zero effective, right? Number three, a mutual mind state. This is where you have a friend that you trust or a spouse, and you're able to look into the eyes of that other person and quote-unquote know what they're feeling or thinking because of the bond between the two of you. And that takes time. It takes time to grow. Number four, repeatedly using the mutual mind state skill until the untrained mind learns it. And you practice it, and with somebody. It takes a person, eye to eye, and you practice it until both minds learn it. It's learned behavior. Number five, telling the story of the mutual mind state interaction. When you want to propagate that skill to other people, you tell them your experience, your story. And then they can see it, and then they know how to navigate it as well. And you help them do that. So it's a pretty vulnerable experience. And if you have shame, you're going to have a very hard time trying to do mutual mind state with somebody. Because shame makes you want to hide. And this is you saying, I'm opening the doors to my soul, and I'm going to let you look inside of me. That's what this is. And honestly, I haven't found a whole lot of people willing to do that.
True.
So it's tough, but you can do it. And the more you don't want to do it, the more you need to do it. Right? Yeah. So for our farm family here, that's here, I encourage you, next time you have your GE, request a mutual mind state experience with your facilitator. Ask for it. And go after it. It'll bring down walls. It'll help you overcome your shame, your fear, et cetera, et cetera. It'll bring all kinds of stuff up to the surface, which is a good thing, because then you get rid of some junk. Microphone Al up here, Gina. Lisa.
I just wanted the mutual mind state. Is that practicing these? Is that what that is?
The 19 relational skills is part of it, not all of it. Those 19 are individual skills.
Okay, will you just redefine what mutual mind state is?
It's where two people who trust each other are willing to look left eye to left eye, and you don't speak. You just look in each other's eyes and you allow your brain to talk to their brain and their brain to talk to your brain. And you do that with the Lord as well. So it's both. And then after, set a time, 5 minutes, you'll be amazed at how long that 5 minutes feels, especially when you start. And then after that, then you two discuss what you perceived from each other. And that builds a bond like crazy. And it strengthens your relational skill to discern and connect with people, attune to people. All right, question here?
No, I read something about what you're talking about, but they did that. I read something about that, and they did it for 15 minutes instead of 5. And then they interviewed them, and some of them even said, I felt so close to that person, I could have married him.
That's why I said don't do mutual mind states with the opposite sex, And some of you can do 15. Most people can't to start with. It really is an intense experience. So, I don't want to put pressure on you. And I always set people up not to fail. So that's why I said 5 minutes. Most people can handle 5 minutes. And it's really actually a wonderful experience as long as you have somebody that knows you and you trust and they're going to be blessing you instead of telling you your knees are too big and you're what I'm saying? So it's a wonderful experience. So the rule is bless. Don't point out, especially if you're married, it's not the time to tell your spouse that they need to change XYZ. No. But you just bless and encourage each other through that. It's wonderful then. And it's spirit to spirit. So it's powerful. Okay? Any other questions? Mary.
So when you're having that eye contact, left eye to left eye, are you talking about an encounter situation or are you talking about generally relational skills when I'm with the person next door or when I'm with a friend or when I'm with somebody I don't know or, you know, are you talking about just an encounter time?
So I'm talking about intentionally having a time where you practice. And what you're practicing is looking in left eye to left eye. The reason for that is because when you look in somebody's left eye, you stimulate their relational brain circuits to come online. And so you want them to be relational. You don't want them to be logical and telling you how they're going to fix you or, you know, right.
Okay.
So you look left eye to left eye for that reason. And you practice that skill. It's a learned skill. And that muscle gets stronger and stronger so that 6 weeks later, you're in the grocery store line and you strike up a conversation with somebody and all of a sudden, the Holy Spirit's able to connect you and you can, oh, this person's really sad. And you're able to minister to them.
I see what you mean now.
See? Okay. So it's a skill that you learn so that you can use it to help and attune to people and bless them.
Cool.
Have you ever known somebody that you meet them for the first time and before you know it, you spilled your guts to them? You're like told them your whole life story. It's things that you've never told anybody. Well, they have a very strong mutual mind state that your brain recognizes it and your brain says, they're safe. Now I get to tell. I've been wanting to talk and nobody would connect with me.
Wow.
Yep. Great. Yep. All right. It's a good thing. Yahweh gave it to us. Don't be afraid of it. At first I was like, I don't know about this. You know, I was guarded to start with, but I love it. Okay, ready to go on then. If I can remember where we are. Okay, so these five steps of mutual mind state, etc. It's like learning how to whistle. For you to learn how to whistle, you need an interaction with somebody who knows how to whistle. And you're able to copy them and practice with them. That's what mutual mind state practice is, skill. You find somebody that knows how to do this. They know how to attune to you. They're not guarded. They're able to just relax and let you in, and you are able to receive it and practice and learn how to do this. Now, here's part of this mutual mind state used to be absolutely normal life. And what's happened is we become quite non-face-to-face in our society, you know?
Yeah.
The number of face-to-face encounters and mutual mind state interactions has diminished greatly. Our technology that we have blocks the mutual mind states. And you have to have mutual mind states if you're going to be able to propagate that skill. You have to practice it. And it doesn't work on a phone, not even on Zoom. It has to be face-to-face. You can't do it through texting. You can't do it through a Zoom call. It's face-to-face. Colleen's got it. Thing. So smartphones, watching TV, texting, calling, posting your life on social media, all of these are 100% barriers for propagation of these critical relational skills.
The best place to practice is the grocery store. I get to do that a lot. It's fun.
I'm going to make a little correction.
Okay.
You don't want to practice mutual mind states on people that you don't know. You can download stuff you don't have any business knowing or downloading. Practice with people you know and trust. Once you learn the mutual mind state, and if the Lord speaks to you, then you're able to minister to somebody in the grocery store. But that's not where you start, right? And again, if it's someone of the opposite sex, I'd say off limits. So, okay. All right. Electronics, rewire your brain. This is brain science. Electronics actually rewire your brain, particularly for people with low joy. Neuroscience tells us that the brains of the younger generation today actually is formed differently from those of us who are 60 years old and older. Their brains look different. Wow. 60 and under, they look different. And it's because of the frequent use of electronics. They don't know, the brain science says now, they don't know if that's good or bad. It's just different, in their opinion. But I'm going to tell you some of the effects of it. A technologically wired brain has a difficult time resting and shutting off. It has a difficult time calming itself down. And it has a difficult time going to sleep. That's what's the result of electronics. Texting does not have the same effect as hearing somebody we love laugh. When essential relational skills are missing, families pass on anger, alcoholism, narcissism, drug abuse, violence, neglect, and vulnerabilities. Someone must be the joy starter to bring joy back into low joy families, churches, groups of people. Tenderness and joyful and Yahweh. Tenderness and Yahweh encounters are crucial if we want to help others return to joy. Paul said in Galatians 6:1, brothers and sisters, if someone is caught in a sin, you who live by the Spirit should restore that person gently. That's being a gentle protector. You don't ignore it. You don't sweep it under the rug, pretend like it didn't happen. You confront, but you do so with gentleness. Protectors generally approach others by showing them a weakness that they have first. At the same time, protectors keep their attention on the other person. They don't make it about themselves. Powerful leaders will sit down and listen and then say something like, would you help me understand something? I wonder if you could explain blah, blah, blah. They present their need to understand, exposing that they don't know everything. The transparency of the protector is crucial to any progress. Protectors present themselves in vulnerable ways that expose weaknesses that they could just as easily keep hidden. Protectors speak about the importance of the relationship and group identity more than they speak about the problems. They use the relational sandwich. Remember, relationship, problem, relationship, to solve problems. The protector's consistency, emotional availability, and calm presence create a healthy bond to grow new skills. Any questions, comments? All right. Let's look at how to identify people who have gentle protector skills. Oh, there's our sandwich.
Peanut butter and jelly.
Yes, of course. All right. Gentle protectors are caring and warm, inviting. Mine are probably not going to be in the order of yours. Approachable, relational, joyful, consistent and transparent, genuine and comfortable in their own shoes. They create belonging and stay attentive to opportunities to share their joy. They do not hoard. Oh. Huh. There we go. Maybe it's the next one. There it is. They do not hoard, nor do they take from the weak. They give generously. They take care of themselves when feeling tired, overwhelmed, hungry, accused, upset, and the big six emotions. They tend to greet others, look out for the elderly, and play with the children. And sometimes they are the quiet ones preparing coffee in the kitchen. Okay, how can I learn to be a gentle protector? Spend time with those who already have the skills. You become like those you hang out with. So, how can stories, we talked about the stories, propagate skills? Interactive life stories. Interactive means you're not doing all the talking. You're sharing and others are responding and you're sharing and there's this back and forth. Interactive life stories are one of the best ways to propagate gentle protector skills. Stories should be short and focused. Stories must give listeners enough details to understand the context for what we are saying. These stories improve with practice and with feedback. So we invite listeners to share how they felt about the story you shared. And again, this could produce some healthy shame, or you feel like I didn't do it right. But remember, the purpose of this is you're practicing. You're learning how to share and do this. So, anybody have any questions about that? All right, we're going to take 30 minutes. I want you to go to your table group, and I want you to share a life story. You share the problem. Give enough detail, short, right? Enough detail so people know what the problem was. Then you share how Yahweh came through for you and how you felt. That's it, right? Okay? Everybody try to get a turn to do that. And I'll call you back in about 30, 40 minutes. On your mark, get set, go.